Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void. We're prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Trevor Woods here with SB Nation's Maize and Brew with a very special edition of Getting to Know Michigan's Opponent. Michigan beat Ohio State this year. And their season, their regular season, may have ended with that victory. But their playoff hopes, their Big Ten championship hopes are very much alive to win the Big Ten championship on Saturday. They have to face a stingy team that is always coached to a high degree by Kirk Ferentz. And I just can't wait to be in Indy myself. So any Maize and Brew people who see me down there, feel free to reach out and say hello. It's going to be a great weekend for both fan bases. Two fan bases who, you know, I respect. And I believe they respect one another. But to learn a little bit more about the Hawkeyes and their season, I'm talking with Ben Ross from BlackHeartGoldPants.com. How are we today, Ben?
Doing well. No complaints. 55 degrees in Chicago in December. You know, can't get much better than that.
There you go. How's the wind chill, though?
You know, I haven't stepped outside yet. Nobody's told me it's bad, so I've got to assume it's good.
There we go. Living the good Windy City life today. Mm-hmm. Ben, so, like I said, big game. Big game, the biggest of the year for both teams coming up on Saturday at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. But let's talk a bit about how 10-2 Iowa has gotten to this point, gotten to where, with a win, they win the Big Ten title. Iowa, they have the 13th ranked total defense, number 123 in total offense, though, and they rank third in turnover margin. Is Iowa's recipe success as simple as those rankings indicate? They don't turn the ball over on offense, do turn the ball over on defense, and their defense wins them games. Do I have that about right?
More or less, yeah. I'd say you are omitting one really important factor, too, is special teams. You know, it's sweeps.
Oh, yes. Thank you. We appreciate the special teams here. My apologies.
Special teams are special at Iowa, and I'm just always, you know, and this year is, you know, I'd say no different, but it is different because for the first time, really, that I can remember in quite a while, Iowa has a really dynamic kick and punt returner in Charlie Jones, who was recently named Big Ten Returner of the Year. You know, he's the leader in the Big Ten in punt return yards and kick return yards per game. And Iowa typically hasn't really had a guy as dynamic as him. You know, I'd like to point out recently, or highlight rather, you know, against Illinois a couple weeks ago, Iowa went down quick, 10-0, and it sort of felt like we were in despair, and then Charlie Jones returns a kick for 99 yards to the house, and all of a sudden I was back in it. I haven't really seen a guy quite like that. And then furthermore, Torrey Taylor, he's Iowa's punter. He's averaging 45 yards a punt, but a lot of that is because he's just so darn good at at his coffin corners. And finally, I've got to mention our kicker, Caleb Shudix, 22-25 on the year. He had five against Nebraska, really just sealing the deal for us in a nail-biting win, kind of. And, you know, as you mentioned, the turnovers are great, plus 13 margin. You're going to win a lot of games when you when you're able to take it away like that.
Yeah, and man, just looking at those disparities, like I said, that the offense 123rd, defense 13th. So hats off to you, Ben, for being astute there and bringing up these special teams, because to me that's something that flies under the radar, of course, and can contribute so much to wins and losses, especially a team like Iowa that doesn't always score in abundance. So that certainly sounds like something to look out for on Saturday. Luckily for Michigan, they do have a good special teams battery in their own right. Kicker Jake Moody, absolutely phenomenal this year, 22-25. Brad Robbins, one of the better averages in Michigan history, punt average. And then A.J. Henning, he's been quite electric, had a kickoff return earlier this season. So I actually can't wait for the special teams battle. And it would be wild if this does. Last time Michigan and Iowa played was in 2019, and Michigan got out to a 10-0 lead in the first quarter, but man, did that game bog down. Iowa ended up getting a field goal. But these Iowa-Michigan games, they always, I don't want to say always, but a lot of the time they come down to a game that feels like a game from 1985 or 1955, these low-scoring battles. So my question to you is, what is your gut telling you about this matchup? Do you have that kind of feeling too, where you, it kind of feels like it's going to be a low-scoring game? Or do you think it could get a little more higher than some indicate? The caveat there would be both Michigan and Iowa, they are averaging, just allowing their defenses, around 17 points a game. So impressive defense on both fronts.
Yeah, you know, I'm not, I really can't envision a high scoring game. Also, you know, we mentioned 2019. I'd like to mention 2016.
Yeah, you should. They won. Congrats in Kinnick.
I was 14-13 win when they were, I believe, 21.5 point underdogs. It came down to a Keith Duncan field goal as time was expiring. So, you know, I'm not, if that's how this game ended one way or the other, if Iowa's or Michigan's kicker had the opportunity to win the game with one tick left on the clock, that totally wouldn't surprise me. I really can't see a high scoring affair, you know, and it kind of takes, depends on what your definition of high scoring is.
I guess over 17 points.
I was going to say 20, you know, yeah. More than three touchdowns for Iowa is absolutely air raid-esque for us. You know, I'm not totally sure what to expect. I don't think I'm going to be totally surprised by what I see from either team. It's really just going to come down to who can, you know, Kirk Ferentz, and I hate this, I hate how he says this, but it always comes down to execution. But it's always, you know, hat on hat, you know, Jimmy's and Joe's, X's and O's, all that. And it's really, I think this one's going to come down to who's, you know, able to block their guys better, hit their holes better, make the passes better, and don't really expect to see anything too fancy or sexy from either team here.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that Michigan is the, I believe statistically, as far as their total offense, Michigan's the best offense in which Iowa's faced, but Iowa's faced some decent offenses. Penn State has a decent offense. Wisconsin's offense has got it going. Purdue, a good passing attack. Where would you rank Michigan, their overall battery, compared to some of the other offenses you've seen on their schedule, Iowa's schedule?
Well, tell you what, I mean, I just think, you know, the numbers don't totally bear this out, I guess, but I, and here's why. I think Purdue is the best offense we've played all year, simply because Purdue has the pieces had that have always beaten Iowa. I think Iowa's lost to Purdue three of the last 4 years. David Bell this year went for 240 yards, a touchdown on 11 catches. And I just don't think, nothing against, I mean, something against Michigan, but I don't think he got the quarterback or the receiver to really do that. David Bell's burned Iowa before. It's just really, Iowa's kryptonite is when you get these All-American-esque wide receivers, and Phil Parker, as much as I love him, our defensive coordinator, is about as stubborn as it comes when it comes to, you know, not totally revolving a game plan around one receiver. So I do think Michigan's a little bit better. I think it'll be the best offensive line Iowa's faced all year in that sense. I think it'll be the best stable of running backs Iowa's faced all year. I think it'll be a little bit more creative. Iowa's faced all year. No, I think Minnesota arguably has a better offensive line, but Michigan's running backs are better. They're, and you know, it comes down to their coaching's better, their schemes are better. I think they get a little bit more dynamic and creative with their jumbo packages and having, you know, two tight end on the fullback in the backfield some of the time, which is something I've always wanted to see Iowa do, but we'll never see that. So obviously I do have to give you credit, Hassan Haskins. I know I watched the whole Michigan-Ohio State game, obviously, and he was pretty electric. He scares me a little bit, but I don't really see any of your wideouts totally completely burning us away. David Bell has in the past, and that's, I guess that's kind of the only reassuring thing, which is funny to say for a Purdue team that didn't, you know, totally end the year lighting anyone on fire.
Now, the only thing I would say to counter that potentially, like, I don't know what's going to happen. Just like you said, you don't know what's going to happen, right? But Purdue, their whole offense revolves around their passing attack. And David Bell gets a ton of opportunities. For Michigan this year, they relied so heavily on the run game because their offensive line's been so good, and Haskins and Corum as well, to where there have been games where Michigan hasn't really had to rely on the pass. However, in some games against Wisconsin or even this past week against Ohio State, there's been some good contributors. So for any Iowa fans listening, I would say look out for Cornelius Johnson and tight end Eric All. Now, I don't think Michigan's going to land many long shots in this one. Not saying that at all. I don't even necessarily think they'll take that many. But I would actually go so far as to say I'd be surprised if there wasn't one or two throws that were over 35 yards in the air. So I'm glad we brought this part of the conversation up, because I'm actually fascinated about it and what Michigan's going to attempt to do against a pretty darn good Iowa secondary. Now, talking about Iowa's loss, now you already just said that Purdue, you believe, is the best offense all around, just as far as what they can do to Iowa. But Iowa did lose to Wisconsin 27-7. Just curious what went into that loss, specifically the point disparity.
Yeah, lots of that. The Wisconsin game lost quite a bit differently. You know, Iowa turned the ball over three times. We had a -3 turnover margin in that game. And really, you can just point to in the second quarter, Iowa's down 10-0, holds Wisconsin to an incredible goal line stand. Wisconsin turns the ball over on downs at their at Iowa's 1 or 2 yard line. Iowa picks it up there, and the very first play on that possession, we fumble the ball, and you know, Wisconsin then goes up 17-0 going into half, and that's sort of that. Couldn't get anything going on offense, and really Iowa's offense didn't help them at all. Two running backs and our quarterback Spencer Petras each had a fumble in that game, and really you're just not going to win many games when you're -3 in that margin, especially when you're Iowa, when they feast on that going in the opposite direction. So it was a little bit different game. It was obviously, I don't want to take anything away from Wisconsin. I was always struggled against the Badgers, especially Paul Chris teams and Brett Bielema teams too before him. So it's that's the problem. I guess it's been more the same for Iowa against the Badgers. Just can't really generate any points, and then when you shoot yourself in the foot three times like that, you just don't really expect to win. You know, that's the first time I can remember turning off a game early, just because it was over so quick. Iowa finally put in our backup Alex Padilla. It was too little, too late, and nothing was really going on for us there.
And let's move talk about Iowa's quarterbacks. Last week, two quarterbacks were used, Spencer Petras, mm-hmm. then Alex Padilla. Could this dynamic happen again against Michigan, or do you think Spencer's just going to carry the load?
So that's the only thing. I'm not a coach. I would like Iowa's you know, Padilla and Petras bring a little bit of different things together. Namely, you know, Petras is a statue back there, and Padilla is a little bit quicker. At the same time, Petras is 4 or 5 inches taller and has a better command of the offense. Padilla was pulled against Nebraska because he was really missing open guys down the middle. He had one interception, should have had maybe 2 or 3, and he should have had a touchdown, but was called off the board. And you know, if that stays on the board, who knows what happens. I'd like to sit here and say out Spencer Petras, he's starting. He's going to go in and be on a short leash. If he misses some throws or turns it over or gets sacked 4 times in the first half, I'd like to say we put in Padilla then if the game's still in hand, and just try and switch it up a little bit. But also, I do know that these Iowa coaches are very, very stubborn. The only reason Petras got pulled a few games ago against Northwestern was because of an injury. You know, he couldn't throw the ball more than 10 or 15 yards. And that was a little bit frustrating because that's sort of how he looked for a game or two prior as well, and they still stuck with him. In spite of his play, Iowa's winning games because of their defense and the mistakes they were generating, making other teams make. So I would like to say, you know, Petras isn't going, be on a short leash if things aren't working. But I think if it's still a close game at half and Petras isn't, you know, turning the ball over and his mistakes aren't gut punches, if they aren't totally, if the game's still within reach, I think we'll see him all 4 quarters. But I would like to see, and it's not like, I don't think Iowa's going to be like Michigan or Purdue where they've got special plays or packages for Padilla to insert. I would like to see that, but I just don't see that happening. So I would expect a healthy dose of Spencer Petras if the game's close throughout.
Now, has Petras showed this season that he can handle a blitz well? Because obviously Michigan with edge rushers David Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson, that's going to present a challenge for Iowa or any team. Look at Ohio State last week. That definitely impacted their loss greatly. How has Petras done against the blitz this year?
I mean, horribly. As I mentioned earlier, he's a statue back there. I think I was number – I'm trying to find it right now. We're tops in the conference for sacks allowed. I want to say somewhere in the 30s even. He got sacked 4 or 5 times against Purdue. Carl Loftus just totally and completely ate him alive, which is what makes me nervous, because I know you have Hutch and Ojabo on the outside there for you guys, and as good as Carl Loftus is, you got two of them. So that just makes me a little bit nervous. That's why I would have liked to see Padilla maybe not necessarily get the start, but if Petras is getting eaten alive, because he just can't really move by virtue of not just his size too. He's just not a very mobile guy. He's 6'4" out there and a little bit like a statue, and not super muscly. Maybe like a previous Iowa quarterback, Nate Stanley, who was just tough to bring down by virtue of his, you know, he was a tree trunk below the waist. So Michigan's gonna be pinning its ears back. I think all 4 quarters. I'm very interested to see what Iowa's gonna do to try and offset heavy rush. And the problem is too, I've seen Iowa give up more sacks and 3-man rushes this year than I've ever seen before. And so with Michigan just rushing 4, they'll be able to commit their guys to covering receivers and not really have to spend too much brain space on safeties or linebackers blitzing, especially because Iowa's offensive line has struggled quite a bit this year. So that's what scares me the most, is just protecting our quarterback, whether it's Padilla or Petras. And the fact of the matter is, Petras can't move super great, so that, and everybody knows that, and I know you guys know that.
Exactly, and it's just one of those matchups that really, you know, it could go off the rails if Iowa doesn't clean things up quickly, if some miscues unfold. Last time, as you just said, Nate Stanley, he was a big, tough, strong guy, but he was a statue too. Michigan got to Stanley 8 times. They sacked him 8 times in 2019. They hit him a whole hell of a lot. I got developed a ton of respect for Stanley that day, his ability to keep getting up, because it wasn't just those 8 sacks. It was all those other times they kept hitting the quarterback. So we'll see if Michigan can do the same to Petras, but who the hell knows? Last question for you, a bit of a longer one. The biggest players, a couple on offense, and on defense that we haven't talked about to this point.
Yeah, and the problem with you asking me who's the player to look out for on offense, it's just tough to pick one simply because...
Well, you can keep answer the way you want, man, because our readers love the more information, the better, as far as that goes.
Well, then the answer has to be center Tyler Linderbaum. You know, first team All Big Ten. He's a likely or a potential Outland Trophy winner, and you know, likely NFL draft pick, first or second round if he were to declare. He's only a junior this year too, and. Well, what he's done, you know, if I wouldn't have him, the entire offensive line would be a whole big mess, simply because he's the straw that stirs a drink. He's able to help. Iowa's got so many touchdowns that are just QB sneaks or short third down or fourth down conversions that were QB sneaks under him, because I truly believe he's, you know, 1 or 1A center in all of college football. And that's just pretty great. You know, if I were to give you a slightly sexier answer, I'd have to take Keegan Johnson, who's a true freshman wide receiver out of Nebraska. He usurped a junior wide receiver, Tyrone Tracy, who was pretty capable. But he took over his duties about six games into the year this season, and totally completely blew open the Minnesota game. He had one of the most incredible plays, touchdown runs I can remember from an Iowa receiver against Minnesota. He's got only 17 receptions this year, but he's averaging 20 yards per catch, and he's got two touchdowns. And I have to imagine I was going to try and get him the ball when we really need it, because he's, even though he's only 18, 19 years old, he's really proven himself. On the defense, but countering that, you know, opposite of that, on defense, it's sort of hard for me to pick. It'd be really easy for me to say Riley Moss, Big Ten Defensive Back of the Year. He has four interceptions, and he was named Defensive Back of the Year, including missing three games. I don't totally buy into Pro Football Focus stuff, but number one rated corner, I believe, in all of college by them. The most incredible stat is Nebraska and Illinois, they didn't zero stats in those games, because they're avoiding him entirely. And so if I were to get a little bit more nuanced with that, I might say Jack Campbell, a middle linebacker, who's one of the best and most underrated middle linebackers. Iowa's had a story, has had some pretty great middle linebackers in the past, but he's second in the conference in tackles. He's a 6'4 guy, 230, and just he doesn't miss anything. And he can run, he can blitz, he can cover, he just does it all. After them, you know, Jamari Harris will be the corner opposite of Moss, and he's starting in for an injured Matt Hankins, who is plenty great in his own right, but he's been hurt with a hamstring the last three or four games of the year. And only a sophomore, Harris has played really well, because if you can't throw it to Moss, you can throw it to Harris, who's gotten a lot of looks. He had the game-sealing interception against Nebraska last week, and he's really coming into his own. And then finally, I want to mention Dane Belton. He's actually tied in the conference lead for interceptions with five, sort of a linebacker-safety hybrid. We call it the cash position, and he's certainly going to be an NFL prospect one day too, playing the same position that Amani Hooker, who's currently for the Tennessee Titans, was playing, sort of a hybrid type, and he's just all over the place. He's a ball hawk, and he can do it all as well. So it's a little bit easier for me to choose on defense, and that's because, you know, this Iowa defense is pretty great.
Man, you know, just listening to all that and just our conversation to this point, of course Iowa has a couple weaknesses here and there, and the same can be said for Michigan, but there's no doubt this is a team with some scary players, and, I have a lot of respect for this matchup, and if I was a betting person, which I am not, I'd be weary of putting a bet on either team heading into this one. It should be a real good one in Indianapolis. Thank you to Ben. Ben, you want to tell folks where they can find your work and find you on Twitter?
Yeah, if you feel inclined, you know, I'm at RenBoss23 on Twitter. We're on the Blackheart Gold Pants SB Nation blog. I just want to shout out quick, I am a betting man, so I think...
There we go. Let's hear it.
I think taking Iowa plus 10.5 points is kind of not free, but it's easy because I'm wanting to take the points. I also do want to mention I took Michigan, you know, straight up money line. And I'm actually not a huge betting person. I only lay a few bets here, so I like to do it when I can. But I sort of had a really great feeling about Michigan last week over Ohio State, and so that paid off dividends for me as well.
That'll do it for this week's edition, and hopefully there's two more editions this year, two more opponents after this one for the Wolverines, but they got to get that victory over Iowa on Saturday first. Once again, this is Trevor Woods from SB Nation's Maize and Brew, and you can follow me on Twitter at WoodsFootball, and you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and pretty much wherever else you get your podcasts. We'll be talking to you soon. Take care.